Hey, everyone. Welcome back to AI Special Report. I'm Skylar Monroe. I run an AI research lab at a FANG company, and this is the show where we break down what's actually happening in AI without the fluff. Huge thanks to our sponsors, Ada, who helps clients integrate AI into their workflows, Ago Consulting, pronounced Ago, your go-to for silicon development consulting from AI to SoHe, and Zen Semiconductor, an umbrella company with a portfolio of silicon industry companies, plus Ada for deploying AI at scale in any business, and their Glow Accelerator makes AI models run faster and cheaper. Today we've got a wild one, AI scammers that are better at building trust than humans, a 25-year-old medical data platform that quietly became a global standard, rare earths going overseas despite the domestic push, a new system called Murakab that's speeding up AI agents, and Tim Cook hinting at a paid tier for AI power users. Let's get into it. All right, first story, and honestly, this one kind of stopped me in my tracks when I read it. Researchers ran a study where they pitted a human against a Claude agent, that's Anthropic's AI model, in a trust-building experiment over text. The setup was that both the human and the AI were trying to build rapport with other participants over the course of about a week. And the result? The AI was more effective. Not just a little more effective, measurably better at creating what the researchers called exploitable trust. That phrase alone should make you pause. So let's unpack what exploitable trust actually means here, because it's a loaded term and it deserves some precision. It's not just that people liked the AI more or found it friendly. It means the AI was better at getting people into a psychological state where they were more likely to act on what it was suggesting, more open to influence, more vulnerable, essentially. And when you frame it that way, the implications get pretty serious pretty fast. Now, from a technical standpoint, this isn't entirely surprising to me. These large language models are trained on enormous amounts of human conversation and interaction. They've essentially absorbed the patterns of what makes communication feel warm, responsive, and personalized. They don't get tired. They don't have bad days. They don't accidentally come off as distracted or disinterested. Every response is calibrated, and when you're trying to build trust over text, that calibration is a massive advantage. But here's what I think is the really important layer to this story. It's not just about scammers. Yes, the framing is around fraud and social engineering, and that's a legitimate and urgent concern. Scam operations that used to require large call centers full of humans can now potentially be run with a handful of people and a bunch of AI agents working around the clock, each one better at the job than any human would be. That's a genuinely terrifying scaling problem for fraud prevention. But the broader implication is that AI is crossing a threshold in social intelligence that we didn't fully anticipate hitting this soon. When a machine can outperform a human at something as fundamentally human as building trust, that changes the game. It changes how we think about authenticating who we're talking to online. It changes how we think about consent and manipulation. And it raises real questions about what guardrails need to exist at the model level versus the platform level versus the regulatory level. From a practical standpoint, if you're building products or services, you need to be thinking about this. The same capabilities that make AI dangerous in the hands of bad actors are the capabilities that make it incredibly powerful for legitimate customer engagement, support, and onboarding. The question is, how do we preserve the benefits while building in the protections? And honestly, I don't think we've answered that question yet. This research is a signal that the clock on answering it is ticking faster than we thought. All right, story two. And this one is a bit of a slow burn, but it's genuinely fascinating, especially if you're in healthcare AI or data infrastructure. MIT put out a piece on Physionet, which is a biomedical and clinical data platform that launched 25 years ago. And while 25 years might not sound like breaking news, the anniversary is a moment to reflect on what this platform has actually become and why it matters so much right now. So here's the backstory. The core of Physionet goes all the way back to a system developed at MIT in the 1970s, which is practically prehistoric in computing terms. The idea was to create a shared open repository of physiological data that researchers anywhere in the world could access and build on. And over the decades, it has quietly grown into one of the most comprehensive biomedical and clinical data repositories on the planet. We're talking ECG recordings, ICU data, sleep studies, and a whole lot more. Now, why does this matter in 2025? Because data is the oxygen of modern AI. And in healthcare specifically, data has historically been one of the most locked down, siloed, difficult to access resources that exists. Every hospital system has its own formats, its own privacy frameworks, its own politics around sharing. Physionet essentially cracked that problem not through regulation or mandate, but through vision and community. It built something that researchers wanted to use and contribute to, and that created a flywheel. The MIMIC dataset alone, which is hosted on Physionet and comes from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, has been cited in thousands of research papers and has been foundational to a huge amount of clinical AI work. Models trained on MMIC have influenced everything from sepsis prediction to ICU resource allocation. That's real-world impact that traces back to a data-sharing decision made decades ago. This is the long game of infrastructure investment paying off. And I think this story has a lesson that goes beyond healthcare. In AI, we talk a lot about model architectures and compute and training techniques. But some of the most durable competitive advantages in this field come from data. Not just having data, but making data useful, accessible, and trustworthy. Physionet did that before it was cool. Before there was an AI boom. Before anyone was talking about foundation models. They just built good infrastructure and maintained it with integrity, and now the whole field is benefiting. If you're working in any domain where AI could have high-stakes applications, healthcare, finance, legal, infrastructure, the Physionet story is a blueprint worth studying. The question isn't just, can we build a good model? It's, do we have the data ecosystem to support it? And building that ecosystem takes time, takes trust, and takes people who are willing to play a very long game. MIT and the researchers behind Physionet played that game and won. Respect. Okay, story three. This one sits at the intersection of geopolitics, supply chain, and AI, and it's one of those stories where the headline sounds dry, but the implications are actually pretty significant. The story is about U.S. rare earth miners who are selling their materials to Japan and South Korea, even as the Trump administration has been pushing hard to develop a domestic rare earth supply chain. Basically, the domestic demand just isn't there yet. For context, rare earth elements are critical inputs for a huge range of technologies, electric vehicles, defense systems, wind turbines, and yes, the hardware that powers AI magnets made from rare earth materials are in everything from data center cooling systems to the chips and components that make modern AI infrastructure run. So when we talk about rare earths, we are very much talking about AI infrastructure by extension. The irony here is pretty thick. The whole point of the push to develop domestic rare earth capacity was to reduce dependence on China, which has historically dominated rare earth processing. The U.S. has actual rare earth deposits. That's not the problem. The problem is that even when you mine the raw material domestically, you need processing and refining capacity, and you need end buyers. And right now, the processing capacity and the end market demand are both lagging behind. So what's happening in practice is that U.S. miners are doing what any rational business does. They're selling to whoever will buy. And Japan and South Korea have advanced manufacturing ecosystems that need these materials right now. They have the refineries. They have the factories. They have the demand. The U.S. doesn't have that pipeline built yet, so the minerals are going to Asia, which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole initiative. From an AI perspective, this matters because the hardware arms race is real. The ability to build advanced chips, to build data centers, to build the physical infrastructure that AI runs on, all of that depends on supply chains that are far more fragile and geopolitically complicated than the software side of AI would suggest. When people talk about AI dominance, they're often thinking about algorithms and models and talent. But underneath all of that is a physical layer that is deeply tied to mining, logistics, and international trade. The lesson for AI leaders and investors is to pay attention to the full stack, not just the software and model layer, but the hardware layer, and not just the hardware layer, but the raw materials layer beneath that. Whoever controls critical supply chains in rare earths and advanced semiconductors has leverage that doesn't show up in a model benchmark. This story is a reminder that the race for AI supremacy is also a very physical, very terrestrial competition. And right now, the domestic buildout has a pretty significant gap between ambition and execution. Story 4, and this one is more squarely in the technical lane. I love it. MIT researchers have developed a new system called Murakkab, M-U-R-A-K-K-A-B, and it's designed to optimize the design and deployment of what they're calling multi-step workflows, which is essentially the architecture that powers AI agents. And the results in terms of speed and energy efficiency are pretty compelling. So let me set the stage here. AI agents, meaning systems that don't just answer a single question, but actually plan, reason, and execute multiple steps to accomplish a goal, are one of the hottest areas in AI right now. And for good reason, they're what push AI from being a clever chatbot into being something that can actually do work autonomously. But here's the challenge. The more complex the agent workflow, the more compute you need, the more latency you introduce, and the more energy you consume. And at scale, those numbers get ugly fast. Murakkab addresses this by essentially rethinking how these multi-step workflows are structured and deployed. Instead of treating each step in a workflow as an independent operation and just running them in sequence, Murakkab optimizes the pipeline holistically, figuring out which steps can be parallelized, which models are most efficient for which subtasks, and how to rote work to minimize both time and energy consumption. It's almost like a compiler for AI agent workflows, if you want a useful analogy. What I find particularly interesting about this work is where it sits in the broader conversation about AI efficiency. There's been a ton of focus on making individual models more efficient, techniques like quantization, pruning, distillation, all that good stuff. But as we move into an agent-centric world, the unit of compute isn't really the single model inference anymore. It's the full workflow, and optimizing at that level is a different problem that requires different tools. Murakab is one of the first serious attempts I've seen to tackle that specifically. The energy angle here is also worth dwelling on for a second. A is energy footprint is becoming a real issue, both from an operational cost perspective and from a sustainability perspective. Data centers are already consuming enormous amounts of power, and the projections for agent-based AI workloads are even more intense. Any system that can meaningfully reduce energy consumption at the workflow level is going to attract serious attention from hyperscalers and enterprise AI teams. The ROI story there is very clear. If you're building AI agent pipelines right now, whether for internal automation, customer-facing products, or anything in between, this kind of infrastructure-level optimization is something you should be paying attention to. It's the kind of work that doesn't make the headlines the way a new model release does, but it's foundational to whether agent-based AI actually scales economically. Murakab is early-stage research, but the direction it's pointing is exactly right. Okay, last story, and it's a classic Tim Cook move: say a lot without saying very much, and leave everyone trying to decode the tea leaves. During Apple's earnings call, Cook hinted that Apple may introduce a paid upgrade tier within iCloud Plus, specifically for AI power users. The quote was essentially that people are going to want to use Apple Intelligence and the upcoming Siri AI a lot, and that there will be upgrade possibilities on iCloud Plus for that. That's it. That's the whole hint, and yet, here we are. Let me give you some context on why this is actually a meaningful signal, even though it's vague. Apple Intelligence has been rolling out in waves and frankly has had a pretty mixed reception so far. The features have been criticized as incremental. Siri's overhaul has been slower than promised, and Apple has taken some hits for being behind OpenAI and Google in the generative AI race. So the company is under real pressure to show that AI is going to be a meaningful revenue driver, not just a checkbox feature. Introducing a paid AI tier within iCloud Plus would be a smart move for a few reasons. One, it creates a direct revenue stream from AI that doesn't require selling hardware or apps. Two, it signals to the market that Apple's AI offering is valuable enough that people will pay for more of it. And three, it fits neatly into Apple's existing subscription architecture. iCloud Plus is already a tiered product, so adding AI compute as another dimension of what you're paying for is a logical extension. The interesting technical question is what exactly you'd be paying for. In cloud AI, the cost driver is inference compute. Every time you ask the model to do something, it costs money to run. Apple has been doing a lot of on-device processing to protect privacy and reduce latency. But more powerful AI tasks get routed to their private cloud compute infrastructure. More usage means more cloud compute cost. So a usage-based or tiered model for heavy users makes economic sense from Apple's cost structure. From an industry perspective, this is also part of a broader pattern. We're starting to see AI move from being a feature that's bundled in for free to something that has explicit usage economics attached to it. Microsoft has done it with Copilot tiers. Google has done it with Gemini Advanced. Now Apple is signaling it's heading in the same direction. The free lunch era of AI features is starting to wind down, and companies are figuring out how to turn usage into revenue. The question for Apple is whether their AI offering is compelling enough that users will actually pay for more of it. Right now, I'd say the jury is still out on that. But if the Siri overhaul delivers, and Cook clearly believes it will, and if Apple Intelligence gets meaningfully better over the next couple of software cycles, then a premium AI tier could actually be a significant revenue line. It's a bet on execution, and Apple's track record on that front is, shall we say, mixed when it comes to AI. Watch this space. And that's a wrap on today's episode of AI Special Report. We covered trust manipulation, data infrastructure, supply chain geopolitics, agent efficiency, and Apple's AI monetization play. Not a bad run. Big thank you to our sponsors. AI Special Report brought to you by Ada, Ago Consulting, and Zen Semiconductor. If you're enjoying the show, you'll definitely want to check out Unzip in the Ada Podcast Network. It digs into tech, software, and the tools shaping how we build, and it's a great listen for this audience. Make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. And if this was useful, share it with someone in your circle who needs to stay sharp on AI. Full links and sources are in the show notes. See you next time.